This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning, I'm Sharad Kudun with me, Melissa Idris and Tan Chung Han, and the top stories of the day. We're going to be looking at business, but today, as it will be, I think, for the next couple of weeks, business was going to be infused with politics and politics, and the business of politics is going to be on everybody's lips. Now, victim, you might call it, victim of a lot of the political wrangling in recent times has been the high-speed rail projects that we had. I say victim only because a lot of focus has been placed on what benefits they're going to bring, and with both sides weighing in on this, but because it's multidimensional, and I think especially in terms of the critique. But let's point to one statement that's come out of the Johor State Public Works, Rural and Regional Development Committee Chairman Hasni Mohamed. He says that, in fact, the ECRL, as well as Kuala Lumpur-Singapore high-speed rail, will not destroy the local airline industry. And why did he say that? Well, because former Finance Minister Dayam Zainuddin came out to say just that.
That's right. So Dayam Zainuddin alleged that these kind of high-impact transportation projects, the ECRL, the HSR, they would ruin the local airline industry. So I think the idea is to kind of zoom out and see. I don't think it's just the local airline industry that can, you know, that could see an impact. It's both positive and negative impacts all around, right? So you want to kind of balance that or weigh the pros and cons, so to speak. And taking, I think, the Johor State Public Works Chairman's comments at face value, saying that perhaps these projects are, you know, holistically planned and will not give that much of a negative impact, I think we'll kind of put a pin in that and kind of look at the ECRL, the East Coast Rail Line, as a whole. Because again, you know, there's been multiple analyst reports now saying, yes, there are several great impacts to it, but what about other issues like cost? This is one of the most costliest rail projects per kilometer that we're seeing. So again, you know, it's weighing the pros and cons.
Yeah, and so to get a better idea about the costing for the ECRL, we spoke to Dato Sri Jebasingam Isaac John, who is the CEO of the East Coast Economic Region Development Council. This happened on the Breakfast Grill back in January. By all means, go and check out that podcast via the BFM app. Now, there are several details to this financing scheme, which I won't go into, but the idea is that, well, he provides his justification for that 50 to 60 billion ringgit price tag there, right? But, you know, ultimately, you know, the question they have to ponder upon, what does it give the Malaysian economy? Are the positive spillover effects enough to warrant that kind of price tag?
I mean, the thing is we don't have to just listen to what the planners say and their aspirations, or the critics are saying in terms of their detailed concerns. We can actually look elsewhere. In fact, mm-hmm. one of the great places to look at would be China. China's had an extraordinary network of high-speed rail. And this is a story not just about prices and transport choices. This is about technology. You know, trains, and this we tweeted out earlier an article from Bloomberg, and part of this article says trains are traveling so fast they're almost flying, from Beijing to Shanghai, from London to Brussels, from New York to Washington DC, Seoul to Busan, Rome to Milan. All these high-speed rail links are doing extraordinary transformative things that the old train systems could not do.
Well, okay, so if we were to compare, say, speedy trains and, you know, direct flights, for instance, granted, I'm not disputing that rail technology has come a long way, that you can travel in a very, you know, you can travel a lot faster than you could a decade ago, five years ago, right?
And with great comfort
correct.
As well.
However, if you look at how they're interchangeable. So trains and planes are generally competitive until your travel plans extend beyond 1,000 kilometres. Then after that, it becomes quite difficult. So users tend to prefer using planes as opposed to rail. And this is according to the Journal of Advanced Transportation.
Right, but whether or not that actually will ruin, as Tun Daim alleges, the aviation industry, I think that is subject to plenty of robust debate, right? Because, you know, you could also argue that with the high-speed rail, it provides a viable option option for commuters, right?
Like so, Singapore, KL,
yeah, you
that
know,
route.
Go out there for lunch, come back, you know, for dinner.
Well, okay.
That's my plan.
That's right. Okay. Always revolves around food, huh?
Of course.
And your revolving waistline.
Thank
okay,
you, buddy.
Now, the in one of the statements made in this article in Bloomberg, it says the entry of high-speed rail in markets dominated by airlines doesn't always lead to fewer available flights. The evidence seems to suggest that affordably priced train tickets actually spur new travel demand. So the key there is travel demand. It's actually upping the industry. People are excited about moving and exploring things.
Yeah, and MIDF research also points to this in their report, specifically on the East Coast Rail Link, the ECRL, that was released last week. They point to new latent passenger demand. Keep in mind that the ECRL has got a 30% allocation for passengers. The rest will be the transportation for goods. And they say, you know, this could create demand for passengers that weren't there before. Those folks just willing, wanting to move from point A to point B, East Coast to the West Coast.
Yeah, I think that's a good point that you made. So 30% is for passengers, right? So the 70%, the bulk of it is really for freight transport. So if you look at, say, the ECRL as a connector for rail freight, for freight transport, because, you know, you're connecting all the East Coast economic region with the with Kuantan Port, with Port Klang. So passengers aside, so great for mobility, for passenger mobility, but when it comes to freight, that's the multiplier effect. That's where the economy will grow.
And also that's where some of the concerns are about how Malaysia fits into China's geostrategic interests, right? How do we, what role are we playing in terms of what China wants with the world, right? Transshipment being a large part of it, do they want to bypass Singapore, and are we providing that access for them from South China to the Straits of Malacca and vice versa?
Yeah, with the Belt Road Initiative, right, perhaps. And yes, so MIDF does answer those questions. So for example, they take the route from Shenzhen to the west coast of Peninsula Malaysia, okay? If they go through the Kuantan Port and the ECRL, it'll save over a day, about 30 hours of traveling time, as opposed if you took the whole route down to Singapore via ship, then come back up the coast.
Yeah, okay.
Right? Now, in terms of cost, it will save them $5 per, for bulk cargo per ton. So it's $56 if with the ECRL, as opposed to $60 if you go through Singapore and the Straits of Malacca. Actually, $4 of savings. Yeah,
but because I think when it comes to ports, there's also a question of efficiency of those ports, right? The time saved in travel might be negated by inefficiencies at the port, right? And so the you know, offloading and unloading of containers is very crucial to the success of a project.
Yeah, sure. But also you're talking about volumes, right? So whether or not the port client ports, the north ports and the west ports can handle more capacity. So having other ports kind of cargo shipped at other ports could help with managing volume.
Well, as they say in economics, all else equal, you know, these are the kind of projections.
Ceteris paribus.
What?
Ceteris paribus. You went with Latin there. Yeah.
Okay. Okay, let's move on to something that's not so Latin. It sounds like it could be in Italian, Lazada, Malaysia. It says it's achieved 100% a year-on growth in sales last year and hopes to repeat the feat this year.
Yeah, so that's great because they achieved 100% growth in sales last, not just last year, but the year before that. So 2016, then 2017, and now they want to do it for 2018. So really, I guess, you know, this is the story of the e-commerce boom here in Malaysia. In fact, Lazada also saw triple sales growth in just one day, actually, on the 11th of November. So that's right, the Singles Day online sales. And they saw some merchandise value of 100 million ringgit.
Right, and to tie it in to the story that we mentioned earlier about transportation and connectivity, right, they also released a statement, they being Lazada, last week, speaking about how you've got over 100 sellers who are on that Lazada platform here in Malaysia who are already marketing their products to Singapore via the DFTZ, the Digital Free Trade Zone, right? So it looks like that could be yet another catalyst for this boom that we are already seeing when it comes to e-commerce. 100% growth on year.
I mean, because platforms like this also are going to have impact on how the brick and mortar stores deal with customers. I've had a recent experience, which, you know, I need not repeat, but it was very positive. I end up not buying on the Lazada platform. I end up going to the brick and mortar because I having checked on the prices, I felt that the brick mortar gave me something I wanted, which is a personal relationship with the shop.
Yeah, I mean, okay, so you're one example, maybe exception to the rule.
I've always been an outlier, what can I say?
But yeah, I mean, look, this is really a huge push, not just on the part of the government, but we really are seeing how the e-commerce sector has recorded significant growth, and what with the DFTZ is just going to continue growing, right? Players like Lazada will definitely benefit from this, but they're not the only ones who will be gaining.
Right. Now, we got a WhatsApp question, you know, asking about whether or not the ECRL loan is in yuan or RM, or in yuan, Chinese yuan, or the ringgit. So I just quickly pulled up the yuan, the ringgit against the yuan, and we have seen the yuan weaken against the Malaysian ringgit, or pretty much since its peak in about the third quarter of 2017. So, you know, if that projection holds, depending on how global macro factors influence the currencies, the pairings, you know, that could influence how much we're actually paying for the ECRL.
Okay, we're coming up to the top of the hour. Sabrina Magdalene's going to be giving us the next bulletin, and then we'll be back with the opening numbers on the stock market and more news and analysis. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.